football on off the ball.
I would definitely have a question about you. Am I okay saying you're committed to Ireland? And he said, yes, no problem. So he is in our frame. He might be one that we would call in June.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. The Yellow iPod on Off the Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off the Ball all season.
Hello and welcome to this week's LOI pod on Off the Ball. Stephen here with you once again. It's been another interesting bank holiday weekend of double-headed fixtures. Some teams happy, some not so happy. We've had a new managerial appointment down at Waterford, so we will be getting into that with the lads in the next few moments. But first up, let's have a listen to what happened on Off the Ball last Friday night.
Our live game in the League of Ireland Premier Division this evening is Bohemians versus Derry City kickoff. Is at 8 p.m.
Derry are unchanged, but I suppose the big news for them is that top scorer Michael Duffy is back on the bench after missing the last five games due to injury. You always wonder, what is a manager going to do to stop the rot? Bohemians haven't won in seven, so they've gone with Colin Whelan and Douglas James Taylor in attack. Looks like it's going to be a 4-4-2.
So I think at the top end of the park, we need to see Bohs clicking to really whet the appetite to think that they could get us into a title race. I think we all look at Derry and think on paper they look an awful lot better than they are. But two wins on the bounce. If they can win this game tonight, that'll be seven games on the bounce unbeaten with a couple of wins thrown in there. And all of a sudden, the James McLean stuff, not having Michael Duffy in the team, it doesn't seem as bad as it was for Tiernan Lynch.
38 minutes gone, still scoreless at Dalymount Park as Derry City come down the right-hand side. A marquee body check there by Sam Todd, but now it comes out to Ollie Ink on the edge of the box. Has time to shoot. Oh, it's gone in. Derry City have taken the lead, and Kacper Czarska is on the ground with his head in his hands. He'd be disappointed he let that one in. Ball played in. Strauss is into the box. He's onside. He shoots with the right and he scores. Bohemians are level. Marcus Strauss makes the wall. He had all the time in the world. He picked his spot in the bottom corner. Just like that, Bohemians are level. Oh, that's the full-time whistle from Rob Harvey. A share of the points at Dalymount Park.
Second half, they were probably the more dominant team, and I think young Ross Tierney came in there and made a huge difference for them. He put his foot in the ball and made them play. What probably didn't help us was losing Kyle Winchester as early as we did, because Kyle's the perfect person to deal with that. So listen, there was lots of things happened there, and some really, really positive things. Something we got to go back and look at.
Ross Tierney comes on at half time. Even how's that conversation go before the match? It's a tough call to make.
I know, look, we haven't won in so long, so people are obviously going to make changes. People are knocking on the door to get in and play. So, you know, your balance up. You have to be fair to say no more, and comes on and does really well tonight.
Yes, there you have it. It was Bohemians at home to Derry City last Friday night. And looking across the two nights of fixtures, it is interesting to see that nobody lost both games across the weekend. But of course, the only side to win both matches at the weekend were Shamrock Rovers, and they keep their place at the top of the Premier Division table. Still behind them are St Patrick's Athletic, and they are currently sitting 3 points behind Shamrock Rovers. And then further back, you've got Bohemians and Dundalk, who are tied on 22 points each. They are 6 behind St Pat's. And then it's Derry City on 19, Shelburne on 17, along with Galway United. And then Drogheda United in 8th position on 16, just a point ahead of Sligo Rovers, and Waterford on 6 points, propping up the table. Now, we've got Finny Perth, as ever, with us here on LOI Pod every week. And we've got our main man, the super sub, Johnny Dunleavy, bringing his dulcet Donegal tones to the podcast this week. Johnny, of course, living down in Kilkenny these days and getting to see a lot of Waterford, Johnny. And we have a new gaffer at the Blues. What did you make of this appointment of Graham Coughlan?
Yeah, that's it, Steve. I suppose before we get into that, where's Gareth this week? I think the last time he came on, he was on the slopes. Oh, so I'm presuming this week he must be in the Bahamas or somewhere, I'd say, is he?
Well, not the Bahamas. I think he's gone stateside, Vinny, isn't he? Where does he usually go? He's probably down in Las Vegas or something like that, or Miami.
He's like Catron Thomas the amount of holidays he gets away. I think he's doing a holiday show, holiday podcast.
Jeez, Kavir, don't be saying that too loudly or he will be taken up on a holiday podcast somewhere amongst the Goal Out family. But Johnny, great to have you on as ever. And it is, it's a... I always wonder about these appointments from outside the league. Waterford have done this before, as we know. It hasn't worked out before for them. Probably the most success they've had under a manager was Keith Long, of course, who would have known the league really, really well. But to go to Graham Coughlan, who I should say he's got an incredible amount of experience. He's worked with four or five different clubs over in the UK. Just your first thoughts, Johnny, on the appointment itself.
Yeah, I suppose, as you say, it's a club I've watched a lot of this year, Steve-O, just given where I'm living, and it's obviously objectively been a very difficult start for them. I think what you'd have to credit the club with anyway is the decisiveness of the appointment and actually making it as quickly as they did, because I suppose, look, the position that they're in, times of the essence, ultimately 14 games gone, it's no small chunk of the season. Looking at the CV, as you say, Graham Coughlan has got a massive amount of experience. As you rightly say as well, you know, a stick that you could potentially use to beat the appointment with is that he doesn't know the league, but I'm sure he's been in difficult positions before when he's been managing in England. I've no doubt that he'll be able to get the players on side. And look, as I suppose, as bleak and all as at times it has looked down in Waterford, there have been green shoots. There have been, you know, little snips of performances where you think actually they're not that far from turning a corner. So look, fingers crossed he can come in now and hit the ground running.
Yeah, Vinny, before we maybe talk a little bit more on Graham Coughlan, just on John Daly, like as Johnny says there, like we're a good bit into the season now. He didn't get a win. Like you'd have to be fair to Waterford's top brass there. They gave him a lot of time. They gave him time to turn this around. Do you think it was the right decision? Do you think maybe they should have done it sooner? Or do you just think, look, they gave John his chance and it didn't work out?
I think, to be fair, it's probably about the right time now. I think if they've given him enough chance. You think about in the last week, there's been three games, and I know he wasn't involved in one. Two wins there is huge in terms of for them. He didn't get it ultimately. So he was given every opportunity to fix it. So I think it's only fair. Sometimes we criticise clubs for pressing the trigger too early. I don't think Waterford did. Sometimes it can go a little bit too long. So it feels maybe a week or two too long, but to be fair to the club, they've given them every opportunity to turn around. That's all you want as a manager, because ultimately John will be thinking, going into last weekend, he could turn that around, and they've given him the best opportunity to do that. It hasn't worked out for him. I do believe capable of being an outstanding manager, John Daly, hasn't gone well for him, but it's tough on him. It is really, really tough.
Like, as you said, Johnny, you've seen a lot of Waterford this season. I was looking just to, you know, it's hard to get a gauge on all of the games that Graham Coughlan has managed. He, of course, has started out his career as a manager with Bristol Rovers, went on to Mansfield Town, went to Newport County then in 2022. I was trying to see if he crossed paths with Paul Jammond at that point in his career, but it seems that Paul was sent out on loan that summer. And then Graham took over in the October, so he wouldn't have known wouldn't have had the access to Paul Jammond's playing abilities in his team. And then it was Boston United where he was between 2024 and 2026. What I could gauge from it, that he is more of a 4-2-3-1 man. Now, he might decide to change that when he sees what players he has at his disposal at Waterford. Your kind of thoughts on that, Johnny? What do you see him doing when he goes in there? Like, he's, you know, he has no time to think here because he's taken over. He's got a match on Friday night. He's going to be in the dugout in Inchicore for the game against St. Patrick's Athletic. Do you see him sticking to that formation, what he knows, or will he maybe change it when he sees the players that he has available?
It's funny you mention that, because it's probably a conundrum that John Daly had from the very start of the season as well, I'd say, Steve-O, and maybe just something that they didn't manage to solve, is that he wanted to get, obviously, Padraig Ammon and Tommy Lonergan in the team kind of at all times. And his initial thought on it was playing a 4-4-2, and it just didn't work. They just weren't able to get any control or any foothold in games, and very quickly changed from that to a 3-5-2 that I don't know did they fully grasp or fully understand at times, maybe, and maybe that was what was causing them issues as well. So look, I suppose the manager, first and foremost, is going to have to lean on people that are there and the people there with experience, and you know they can give them their opinions. And there's some brilliant, brilliant people involved. I mean, David Breen, obviously being the first team coach down there, Brian Murphy in the background as well, that took over on Monday. And, you know, as I say, and Vinny said it as well, John Daly would have looked at last weekend thinking it was an opportunity. And they actually weren't all that far away from making the most of even Friday night, let's say, in Tala. I happened to meet one of the Shamrock Rovers players yesterday in Kildare Village. Now, I won't name names because his girlfriend was doing all the buying for him, and I wouldn't do that to him. But he even said that on Friday night, Waterford were actually very good, that they very well could have got something out of the game and could have won it. And again, on Monday, it was the same, where two absolutely outstanding saves from the Dundalk keeper to keep it at 2-2 in the second half, you know, sort of kept them in it. So there are possibilities there. It's just, how is the manager now going to best utilise all the talent that he has? And that will include a decision around Amund and Lonergan. And I don't know how he's going to do it yet.
Well, like, on that, is Tommy Lonergan, is he an out-and-out centre-forward in your eyes? Can he not play in a 10, say if it was a 4-2-3-1? Could he play wide there and leave Pádraig Amund as the lead striker?
He possibly could. I mean, his hold-up play is good and his technical ability is good. I probably do see him as more of a striker than a 10 myself. I think he can be more of a handful when he's up there. Obviously, he got his goal on Monday, and so did Pádraig Amund. And I mean, that goal, I'm not sure if anyone has seen it, but the second goal for Waterford was an absolutely outstanding goal. And Dean McMenemy, who crossed it, I have to say now, from the brief glimpses that I've had of him and watching him on Monday, he seems to be one that has really grasped his opportunity and you know, shown a lot of bottle when he's in there and playing and on the ball. He's not afraid to get on and play. So for me, he probably is more of a centre forward. But as I say, the manager, his job now is going to be to find solutions, not problems. And that's going to be one for him.
Yeah, what's your thinking, Vinny? Like, if you're a new manager going into a setup like that, you've got very little time to kind of assess what you've got there. And as Johnny says, like, you know, he is going to obviously get some help from the people who are already there. Like, do you kind of stick to what you know as a manager, your formation, or do you try and maybe kind of see you know, change that up to kind of suit the players?
I think you have to look at your squad first. So your squad dictates how you play to a point. But like, what I will say about Graham is, or Coco, as anyone from Cherry Orchard would know him as, he's a hugely experienced footballer. I actually played with him for a year or two in Cherry Orchard senior setup, and he went to Bray Wanderers, and then Kenny Dalglish signed him for Blackburn. He was an outstanding centre half. It was a bit of a Pat Devlin deal where he spent about 2 hours at Bray and ended up at Blackburn Rovers at the time. under Kenny Dalglish signed him, but had a brilliant career, Plymouth Argyle in particular, playing career. But he's had some really good clubs down the level, like Southend. And I actually went over to see him. I spent a day with more staff than him at Bristol Rovers. And I seen him work. And I seen sort of the ins and outs of him.
That was his first job, Vinny, yeah.
Yeah, around 2000, at the end of 2019, I think it was. I went over just as a... I go to the UK quite a lot. Don't generally tell people whether I fly in and watch Crawley Town and come home. I went over to watch Bristol Rovers and watch them train. And what you'll see is, and I have to be careful because I don't want this to sound disrespectful, but there's an old schoolness to Coco in terms of what he will demand out of people. And Waterford will leave no stone unturned. And I don't mean every coach nowadays analyses and sort of overthinks things to an inch of his life. What I mean about Coco is that he will get blood out of a stone. He's that type of manager that some won't like him and some of the players will be ready to die for him. He will be a breath of fresh air in that club. He will push standards within training, he will have the team play the way he played. He was a no-nonsense centre half that just loved the game. And you can tell if you look at a CV and people delve into it, the clubs he's played at. Like Bristol Rovers, for example, his first manager job is a huge football club.
Yeah.
Us in Ireland, it's not. Bristol is a huge club. Bristol City is obviously the bigger club at the moment, but Bristol Rovers is a huge, huge club. He's had some big, big jobs at that level. And Waterford, I've seen a small, because I seen this on somewhere online about an hour or two ago, and then I've seen some of the reaction. A couple of people have sneered their nose at this a little bit. You underestimate Grant Coughlin at your peril. This fella, it's a huge job to get Waterford safe. Absolutely huge. They're in a no-win situation where they are. You underestimate him and what he's done at the hardest level in English football, and it'll be the biggest mistake you'll make. He will get them. He will do a really good job there. Whether that's good enough to keep them up, that's separate. But be under no illusions. Mansfield, Newport County, Bristol Rovers, and
Boston United.
Big clubs as big as Waterford, and most of them are bigger than Waterford. Mm. He's well capable of doing that job. And watch this space with that appointment.
Where do you think the sniffiness comes from, Vinny? Like, is it? Do you think that's like? I wonder sometimes people do feel that if you're coming from outside the league, you mightn't have the knowledge of the players that are playing here, and that might make it hard for you when you're planning tactics and stuff like that when you're going into a match. Like, would you think, has Graham kind of kept in touch with what's going on back home? Would he be aware of some of the talent, some of the players that are playing in the league here?
Yes and no. I mean, not through Graham, actually, even though I played them, but through one of his staff at one stage. I would have spoke to them around the player they were looking at a couple of years ago. So if you think of the level he's either played at or coached at, they would have been watching Irish players. And it will be difficult. I think because he's been so invested in that League One, League Two for the last sort of, since he went to Plymouth, and like 20 years ago, I think he signed for Plymouth and nearly played 200 games. Yeah. So because he's invested so much time and energy at that level, he's come away from the League of Ireland stuff, but he will have good enough contact here. He will have good enough people around him. Johnny's mentioned Brainer and Murphy there as well. So if he may decide to do something a little bit different, he won't be stuck. He'll get the grips of very quickly. I wouldn't be over worried about that in any way, shape or form, but it is a challenge. It would be easier for somebody who knows the league to go in there, but he'll get to grips of that very, very quickly. I wouldn't be. And just to make the point, in around mid-noughties, 2002, 3, around that time, he would have played, as I said, 180 games for Plymouth, over 60 games for Sheffield Wednesday,
yeah.
Yeah, he played at high, high level.
Yeah.
We're in Ireland, in our league, demanding players should be playing international football. And he's been playing at League One level, Championship level, Scottish SPL level, but no one has heard of him. And it's a little bit lazy of people to be critical of this boy. He's had an outstanding football career by Irish terms. I was lucky enough to go to England and get trials and all of that stuff, spend time here, and I consider myself doing okay in football. Mm. He's had 400 or 500 appearances at either League One, League Two level. And there's people in there in our league representing us as fans or things, looking their nose down at this guy. Mm. They're off the heads. He will be thereabouts. He'll do a really good job.
Yeah, and I wonder, it's interesting what Vinny says, Johnny, like about the, you know, old school manager kind of thing. And I wonder, is he going to go in there and he's going to be looking for a lot of, you know, efforts and commitment in training first off? He's going to be looking for a particular level of fitness and that kind of thing. Are Waterford there? Is that something that needs to be worked on, do you think? How do you think that? What would you kind of gauge maybe is the reaction of the squad to what Vinny describes as an old school manager going in there?
I'd say from what I've seen of him, Steve-O, that honesty of effort probably isn't something that they've been suffering from. It's probably been more individual errors, maybe, and maybe not, you know, some at times maybe not fully understanding systems, maybe sometimes not even taking their chances as well. So I don't actually think their honesty or their application is really in question. But I think, you know, sometimes you'll hear a manager saying, and I used to hate it when I was playing. I used to absolutely hate it. You might lose a game or two, and the manager would come in and he'd say, "Right, lads, we're going back to basics." But I suppose when you take a step away from it and you look back at it, or you look at it from the outside, it's absolutely right and it's absolutely what's needed. And from what Vinny says, and from the gauge that you can get of Graham Coughlan, first and foremost, he's going to make them very, very hard to beat. I would imagine anyway, and that's vital for Waterford. They can't afford to be losing too many more games, and I hope he does have that instantaneous impact on them. I mean, there's plenty of experience in the squad there, you know, from Kevin Long to Paddy Gammond, the lads on the side. It won't take him long to get to grips with what he's got, and then it's just about using it right, and hopefully he can.
You know, this is not a Waterford podcast, and by the way, it sounds like I'm a mate or something of Coco, so I'm not in any way, shape or form.
He says like he uses his nickname there. Go on, Ayoy.
Yeah, I know, but that's, yeah. But to go back, and Donny's mentioned one or two, but like, think of the squad there for a second, Donny. Conor Carty, Conor Noonan, John Mann, who else? We touched on Tommy Lanigan. Glenfield, they've got fellas who know how to play League of Ireland football. Like, they're not, you know, some teams have gone down over the years and they haven't been in League of Ireland terms household names. They've got something about them, Waterford. And if Graham Coughlan gets something out of them, they will beat teams down there for sure. Whether he's enough time to turn around, I don't know. But there's definitely a squad there. There's definitely a squad there capable of doing better than they're currently doing.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you look through the names there, as you mentioned, a couple there. You've got Conor Noonan, of course, as well. Absolute dream when it comes to set pieces. Luke Heaney, who we've spoken about on the pod before. And then that experience at centre-half. You know, Hayden Cannon is another one that looked decent in games. Benny Kuto as well. So, like, there's plenty to be optimistic. And I know you're saying it's not a Waterford pod, Vinny. Probably worth just having a little chat around them now that the appointment has been made. So, I think they'd be feeling quite optimistic, Waterford supporters, with the squad. And now with the experience of Coughlan going in there. They're going to a match now in Inchicore Friday night against the St. Pat's team that were held against Sligo Rovers at the weekend. And, like, talk about old school. They've got an old school centre forward in Ryan Edmondson up there who's quite happy to go into battle against their big centre backs that Waterford will have. Johnny, they got some really good midfielders. So, like, you would imagine, as you said, back to basics, is probably going to be try and keep it tight at the back and then maybe hit Pats on the break. What do you think this Friday night?
I'd imagine so, Steve Owen. As I say, the first and foremost, it's just about making them hard to beat or being hard to beat. And going to Inchicore is a very tough, very, very tough place for anyone to go, let alone, I suppose, for a new manager coming in and trying to make a stamp on a team. I suppose from a St. Pat's point of view, as you mentioned earlier, the real winners over the weekend were Shamrock Rovers in terms of results, and it was a disappointing weekend really for Pats, particularly the Galway game. A game they had done everything bar win it, and conceding so late was disappointing. And then a game on Monday against Sligo, where of course they would have been expecting to win it. It was a disappointing weekend for them. As you say, Edmondson has been a little bit of a revelation, I guess, in terms of his physicality and his, you know, being a focal point and target man for them. And they'll be looking to rely on him again on Friday, I guess, to, you know, pick up a more positive result.
Yeah, Vinny, I know what word you were probably thinking about after the two patch results at the weekend. Begins with C, ends with Y. Consistency. Yeah.
Friday, Monday. That's how you win league titles. Yeah. And to be honest with you, I think Pats have won a lot of games that they should win. And I think the biggest tests have to come for Pats over the next few weeks if we're going to have a title race. It's those Dublin derbies. It's the getting wins against the likes of Bowls, Shells, picking up points against Rovers. If they don't do that in the next couple of weeks, like, and then what compounds that, puts them under huge pressure, is not getting rid of Galway and Sligo over the weekend. And they've just given all the momentum up the Lewis line, as I call it, up to Talla Stadium, up the road, because you have to put people under pressure. If you think about, myself and Johnny have both won leagues and lost leagues. Okay, Johnny will tell you, the hardest thing to do is, if you're nil all even in a game at halftime when you're going for a league, you take risks in the second half because 3 points are paramount. If you're 5, 6, 7, 8 points, I remember Johnny was part of a team that was 15 points clear. You don't have to take the same risks. Rovers are now comfortable because Pats aren't consistently putting them under pressure. And then with a half an hour to go, you send the right back on because you're chasing again. And all of a sudden, ball breaks, you get done down his size and you can see it and you're going chasing again. And nobody over 4 or 5 years has done that on a consistent basis. Shamrock Rovers, they test them enough. And that's the problem with the weekend Pats are up to having. They've just let Rovers off the hook. There's no pressure. Next week when Rovers play, it's still all after 70 minutes. It's grand. We're already 3 points ahead. We won't have to take a risk because they're not chasing. We haven't had to chase. That's the problem with the inconsistency.
Well, it is only 3 points. That's the thing.
Yeah, of course.
Like, some of the comments on social media over the weekend was like, you'd swear Rovers had gone 10 points clear and the season was over. It's only three points.
Yeah, because there's an inevitability about it, Steve-O. You have, like, that's just the way it is. Who can you put your hand on heart on and say they're going to be consistent enough? Put this, and that's why I use the example of nil all after 70 minutes. Maybe Johnny disagrees with me. There's nobody willing. You have to be putting the team under pressure for them to make mistakes. And if you're 3, 4, and 5 points clear, you don't make mistakes then.
It's funny you mentioned just even how important the weekend games are, Vinny. So I was looking back on it earlier. The last time the Pats had two games in quick succession like that back at the start of April, the first was against Dundalk and they lost, and the second was against Shamrock Rovers and they lost. And it's, as you say, it's absolutely pivotal that that doesn't happen and that you win those games. And I suppose it's something that any time that, you know, we've been talking or whatever, I've always said, when it comes to the crunch, do Pats have a soft centre or are they able to get themselves out of it? And as yet, I haven't seen any proof that they don't have that soft centre. And I suppose, like Steve-O, as you say, it is just 3 points. It's 3 points to Pats, but it's 9 to the next. It's 9 to third. And all of a sudden, the only team that can challenge them now, as it looks like anyway, is Pats. And I'm just not sure that they're going to ever have that consistency to be able to do that.
Well, the game we do on Friday night, Johnny, it'll be good to have you alongside me once again for our commentary match on Friday and Off the Ball, is Galway United versus Shamrock Rovers over at Eamon DC Park. And it was funny, I was listening to you using the word back to basics there. I was thinking, I can probably guess which of Johnny's former managers was like, right lads, back to basics. Is he going to be saying that to the Galway United squad, John Caulfield, this week before the game?
I have no doubt that he is, Steve, or I certainly have no doubt that they've heard it anyway at some point, whether it was this season, last, the one before. But I suppose, really, it's a testament to John. And as I say, it's totally different when you're on the outside and you're looking in how difficult that he makes a team to beat. And that's what Galway are. They're so, so hard to beat, and they pick up results and they pick up points. I think earlier on today we were talking about it. They've probably conceded more than John would like, and probably more than I would have expected them to concede in terms of being hard to beat. But even at that, they managed to stay in games. They just managed to hang in there, whatever it takes to hang in there. They're never beaten by too many. They're never beaten by three. It's the odd goal here and there. And it's going to be difficult for them on Friday with Shamrock Rovers coming to town. Of course it is. And, you know, the last two games they've had, I suppose, they've had it both sides of the coin. Scoring late and conceding late to get a draw over the weekend, it probably evens itself out. But as I say, I think they're going to pick up enough results to be okay. Outside of that, you know, Friday's going to be difficult. It's not one of those games that they're going to be expected to win.
Johnny, yeah. I'd say the type of player I was, I would have loved to play under Coffey, believe it or not. But you get the sense I know it's a football saying, but you die from or you go to war from. There's probably no, but it's always strange when people ask me about Kenny. Just probably, it's very hard to put your finger on it, but why do I get that sense? Or is that what he creates? Like, he creates that feeling that you're ready to go to war from.
No, he definitely does. And I suppose, like, just going back to it, the first thing that he did when he came into Cork was create a very, very professional environment. He made everything
any little small changes that he had to make, created a player room, in the training ground that was only for the players. No one else was to go in there. You know, made the gym sessions more sort of regimented, or that you had to be there. Different, just little bits like that that he made.
So sorry, Johnny, and that's something he doesn't get enough credit for. It's almost like he's all skill, but he done all the professionalism underneath it as well, first and foremost.
Oh, like very much so, 100%. And obviously, then in terms of like his coaching and his training sessions and stuff, you know, they were always very organized. John Cotter as well, helping him, who was brilliant, you know, brilliant with us. And you've seen what John has gone on to achieve, like now with the Ireland underage teams and stuff. I'm not even slightly surprised. But even going back then to your sort of mentality question, he created like a, I wouldn't even say like a siege mentality, but almost that. You know, there's too much, and I've actually heard it and I've said it since, that football has become very, very nice. Very nice. Everyone's friends, shaking hands. There's no real, like, when's the last game that you watched that was really bitter, that was tough, that was difficult, there was a bad tackling, it just doesn't really happen now. And I suppose that was something that he was very keen to stress, is that, look, you can talk to these lads whenever you want. There's no problem outside of business hour, but when we're playing on a Friday night, there's no room for us being close to these. We have to go out and beat them. We're effectively going to war with them, and that's it. And he would send you out on the pitch so motivated, so ready to go. And like, sure, following on from that, results speak from themselves. And I have to say, I thought he was brilliant, and I'd always say he was a winner, and I enjoyed playing under him.
Just on, what's he like in the build up to the game itself on match night? Like, is he a kind of an inspirational speech kind of manager, or is he just kind of, you know, let the players lead the talk before you go out on the pitch? How did that work under John?
No, he would do his own talk, Steve-O, like without a doubt, you know. And he would have you going out on the pitch. He would also be picking up little snippets on the other team, little bits and pieces that he would have heard, or that he would have, or that he thought of certain people that we could, I suppose, exploit, for want of a better word. So he was very much like that. He would be the one to get you up for games. And as I say, like when you walked out the dressing room door, you were sort of, I suppose, twofold really. The squad was so strong, and the teams that he created were so strong. I think that's probably another thing to mention as well. He recruited very, very well, brought in players of a good age and good character. And we ended up being, we were a squad sort of vast majority from 24 to 32 who were very, very close. And it's very difficult to beat that as sort of a team of men, which, you know, in the league now it's quite young. It's probably unusual to have players of that, a lot of players of that age in the team. But yeah, you walk out the dressing room door, and as Vinny says, you'd probably run through the door for him if he wanted you to.
Vinny, on his recruitment this season, France Pierrot comes in. I think a lot of people, supporters of other clubs, very envious of Pierrot signing for Galway United. A lot of surprise as well. Now, he hasn't hit the ground running. He's 2 goals in 10 league matches so far this season. That can happen. Players can have droughts. Is there an issue there? Do you think maybe was he not on the right course in regards to his pre-season? Is there an issue with the players he's playing beside? Anything you can think of there? Like, I suppose his partnership with Douglas James Taylor was really good when the two of them were at Drogheda United. I don't know, tactically, like, I suppose he was a player maybe would have liked to play on the break, you know, chasing, getting defenders turned and running a goal in that sense.
I think first and foremost, it feels like it's fitness that's been holding him back. We don't know what's going on internally, so we have so many measurements now in terms of whether it's been body fats, whether it's GPS units on players. So John will, and Johnny touched on it, John will know within the inch of his sort of, or within the inch of his body, whether he's got himself and whether he's making those enough improvements every week. If this place somebody in his position, that's the first thing he's got to do. And then can he last 90 minutes and all of them different bits and pieces. So you do feel that coming in so late that he wasn't at the sort of the level required fitness, and it's going to take him a few weeks. And then Waterford's results by their nature are so up and down that there's times where if they went on a run 2-3 games over the next few weeks with wins, you feel he would be right smack banging in the centre of that good turn of form that he would have. Like, they've had a good, really good weekend away to Patson, away to Derry, being unbeaten. But I just mean, when the goals open up, he's got to be in the right sort of place of mind that we don't know about, and he's got to be in the right place fitness-wise. I think very similar styles of play to a point as what he was playing with Rotley. Yes, he had James Taylor, as you said, beside him, but like, albeit Francis Labonte's not as good as Taylor, you would say, he still has a partner close enough to him. I would say it's in him, and John is probably putting him under a little bit of pressure to do more. And I think he has it in him. He's got to now step up to the plate. I would imagine Galway invested quite well from a budgetary point of view in him. So it's time he kicked on to the next level. But to be fair to the player, I think that's coming over the last few weeks. I think he's gradually improving.
Yeah. He's going to be coming up against, well, I'm not too sure really who the back three will be for Overs, because it is quite interchangeable now at this point, Johnny. And I think that's probably a good thing from a Rovers perspective, because, as you know, Pico Lopez is going to the World Cup. Well, we'd imagine he's going to be picked in that Cape Verde squad. I think he went off with a bit of a knock the other night, but it was just a precautionary thing. Like, this Rovers defence, do you think it's going to be okay while Pico's away? Johnny, you've got Enda Stevens has jumped in there. You know, you've got young Corey O'Sullivan has been playing really, really well. Of course, you've got Adam, bloody hell, my brain has gone.
Matthews,
of course, has stepped in there as well. So a lot of experience. There's a fair bit of youth there as well. So will they be okay, do you think, while Pico's away? Or is it his off-the-field stuff maybe, that the intangible stuff that might actually affect them?
Oh, look, it would be a big blow to any team to be losing their captain and a player of that calibre. And, you know, Pico is no different. Like, I suppose, I remember when we were playing and he was at Bowes and stuff, probably didn't expect him to go on and have as outstanding a career as he has had, and he's been phenomenal for Shamrock Rovers. And as you say, almost to the point of being irreplaceable. But as you mentioned, they do have an awful lot of experience to come into that team. And the way that they play and the way that they're coached and how everyone is, I suppose, they know down to, as Vinny mentioned earlier, like an inch of his life, the formation, where to be, their positional play. And Stephen Bradley will already be working on that with and without Pico. The lads will know exactly where they should be slotting in. And I mean, outside of that, the experience that Adam Matthews has, whether it's he slots into that position, whether it's Enda Stevens slots in on the left-hand side of the three, you know, I don't see it being a significant weakness for them, or I don't see it being something that's really going to cost them in the long run, for all that, you know, Pico will definitely be a loss, of course.
Mm. And don't forget, Cleary's back from injury. Subawali has played right side of the centre half. And Grace will probably be the most natural. If you think about Rovers, the two outsides over the years have been Cleary and Grace, or Sullivan and Cleary. And Grace is the most natural sort of one to play in the middle of them, you would say. I don't think they. Once they keep Grace fit and Cleary fit, I think two out of three ain't bad. As someone used to say, Steve, someone used to sing that song.
Come here, we know what song you'll be singing at the end of the season, or will he? Anyway, Vinny, the only interesting thing here as well is Enda Stevens, of course, who was part of that brilliant Sheffield United team that came up to the Premier League, and of course got huge amount of credit because Chris Wilder had devised this new system where you had the back three with the wing backs. Now Enda Stevens, of course, are playing as a wing back in that formation, and then of course you had the marauding centre half, which was John Egan. I wonder, is that something maybe Stephen Bradley will tap into with Enda Stevens when he comes into the team, maybe on a more permanent basis? He was man of the match, by all accounts, on Monday night.
Yeah, to be fair, I think they've all always had an element of that. Cleary does that to a point. So often you see, if you go back to Rovers at the very best, Ronan Finn's almost a centre-forward, and Cleary is joining in from that right centre-half. Cleary has crossed a huge amount of balls from just 5-6 yards outside the box. And that's where Subawali has added another dimension to Shamrock Roberts in the right of a back three. And he'll put Cleary under pressure in certain games, because Bradley will look at him and say, at home in particular, where he's given us another attacking option from our back three. So it's very Chris Wilder-like, as you said. I remember that sort of revolutionary style from them. But Enda Stevens is another great example of the way he's being managed by Stephen Bradley. He said he didn't expect to play a lot. He probably did expect to play a lot deep down. He's come in and he's looked around and went, wow, got a bit quality here. And he's just bided his time and they've gotten fit. And he understands the system now. He understands the way they do things. He understands the dressing room. And I think we had touched on Lopez leaving. I think the more that Matthews and Stevens have got game time, Cleary's come back, Gray's come back, as much as Lopez is a blow, they're really, really well covered in that area now.
I'm interested to see how they get on against Pierrot and Lomboto on Friday night. That game is live and off the ball. You can hear it from 7 o'clock when off the ball gets underway, the match kicking off.
Sorry, the two of you are doing that game, Steve. Yeah. Just a quick question for Johnny. Wouldn't you love to see, and it goes against some my beliefs, wouldn't you love to see Galway play with the two lads up front and just shell the living daylights out of it and just go and chase, Rob, just to see how they react? And I know Galway aren't going to overplay anyway, but just too many teams have tried to match Rovers, different things. Tactically, just send the two of them on the two outside centre halves and just lob balls on top of them for as long as they can.
Bypass midfield.
Yeah, see, that's it exactly. Like, and I suppose it's something that would have been very noticeable even when I was playing. Don't know if you noticed it, Finny, but when a team was playing with one striker, so if they were playing 4-3-3 or 4-5-1, whatever it was, the two centre backs would generally speaking be so comfortable. But all of a sudden, when you would put two up front and put 2v2 at the back, or even it would be 3v2 against Shamrock Rovers, it just creates such a totally different dynamic because it's so unusual and teams so rarely play against it now. Where, you know, before 4-4-2 would have been your bog standard formation, everyone kind of played it. But when you put the two up front and when all of a sudden you change it up and you start going a bit more direct and you, as you say, put people under pressure, pick up second balls, it can be incredibly effective. And look at if it's something that John feels is going to be effective against Shamrock Rovers on Friday, and no doubt he will have thought about it anyway, so it'll be real interesting to see it.
You would have played under Ollie Horgan. I remember once him playing no striker, and he was right winger at the time, standing on the halfway line, and when he got the ball, he just shelled it over into that area. And it is something people have to think when they play against Rovers, that there is different ways of playing, not just the box. And why I say, I would be particularly, when you're the underdog like Galway, play the two of them on the outside of both centre halves and just go long. Just go long over them. And then all of a sudden then the threat of Subawali or Cleary breaking into a box is lessened, because you know, as a centre half, Johnny, the more time someone turns you, then the next time someone gets the ball, you're nearly half turned already, expecting it to go over your head. And it just forces Rovers back 4 or 5 yards. I'd love to see them. We'll see this Rovers team really tested by Galway on Friday night.
Yeah, that's interesting, Vinny. Absolutely. Just to move on then to, there's an interesting game up in Oriel Park as well. I've got to stop saying interesting. Johnny Dunleavy, I know you were speaking to the manager of the host club on Friday night. It is Dundalk against Bohemians. Kieran Kilduff, any surprise to you, Johnny, how well this has gone from so far? Look, I know last three games haven't gone as well. They got a draw against Waterford in an absolutely madcap game down at the RSC. It finished 3-3. Coming on the back of those two defeats, 2-0 away to Sligo Rovers and 2-1 at home to Shelburne on Friday night. But they are going very, very well. They're sitting, as I said, level on points at Bohemians on 22. So could be in third position if they win this game on Friday night. Are you surprised how well it's gone for Kieran?
So, sorry, Johnny. I'm raging we haven't done a homework here. How many goals did Killer score against you, Johnny?
I don't even talk about him when he scored against me, but I played with him. With him. Me and Kilduff, but we were playing with each other in Cork. Never mind the ones he scored against me.
All right.
Fair enough. Don't want to say, use chat away there. I'll see if I can find any info there. Go on, Johnny. Yeah.
And I'll tell you, you talk about a handful there. There was a handful there. That is absolutely for sure. But look, no, going back to your question, Steve, I'm not even slightly surprised, I suppose, that things have gone so well for him. I was talking to him very briefly before the game, and then because he was obviously suspended, so he was up in the stand. And then after the game, I just said good luck to him on the way past. And it was funny, you know, I was thinking about it on the way home. The way the game had gone, I'm not sure who should have been happy or who should have been unhappy with the result, or you know, naturally Killer would have been disappointed, I think, not to win the game, given they were 2-0 up and then 3-2 up with sort of with 5 minutes to go. But in saying that, they could have very well been 3-2 down before that. So it was probably in some ways a fair result. But I suppose, look, going back to Dundalk and what they've been like, I've only seen bits and pieces of them, but I must say what really impressed me on Monday was their fluidity in attack and sort of their unpredictability at times when they're on the ball. It's, you know, as Vinny says, a lot of teams are so coached and maybe even overcoached at times. Dundalk really expressed themselves and play with the freedom. Darren Horgan could pop up anywhere. Owen Kenny could pop up anywhere. Benny Ruby up front, again, you know, using that word again, he really, really is a handful. So they've got an awful lot of attacking talent. They're very, very good to watch. And they've been a surprise package, as you rightly say, but it hasn't really been a massive surprise from my end.
Yeah, what do you think Kieran Kilduff has about him? Like, he's obviously, you know, he's a very new coach. He had his time with Maynooth University, then Athlone Women. Now he's gone on to Dundalk. Like, is it his tactical knowledge? Is it the way he has does he have man management skills? Do you think that make him so good?
I suppose he's not too long gone from the league, I suppose, which is a major plus in terms of his man management skills and recognising, you know, how people feel and, you know, what the problems that they incur kind of as a player and how to deal with it best. I'd also say he probably works very hard at it. He would be a student of the game and he'd think about it and he'd really, really delve into what he can do to make his team better. And even in terms of the recruitment this year, like, if you look at that squad that Dundalk have and some of the players that he managed to convince to come with him to Dundalk, it's absolutely brilliant. Really, really good recruitment. And I actually just sort of anecdotally, I ran into Ella Malloy, of course, plays for Shamrock Rovers ladies, just ran into her in Thomastown the other day. And we were talking about the Women's League and I just asked her about, I said, look, I'm going to the game on Monday and Dundalk are playing Waterford. I said, what would they have thought of Killer in Athlone? And she said, anyone that has ever played under him or had anything to do with him absolutely loved him and really, really loved playing for him. And you know, I'm not even slightly surprised.
Yeah, definitely.
And Johnny, sorry, quick question for you. Young centre-half, two young centre-halves done really well from Newtonite, didn't they? Mm. Like, yeah. You being a centre-half, talk to me about, like, Moyoa.
Well, we spoke about it off air briefly beforehand, myself and Vinny, but I was so, so impressed with Animation. Like, first of all, his physical ability, he is a big, big boy, but he moves very well, passes the ball well. He's aggressive in the tackle, which is probably slightly unusual, even, you know, for centre-halves these days. It tends to be that they're not as aggressive as they used to be, maybe. I remember talking to Padraig Gammond on a podcast at the end of last season, and he actually said that. He said the majority of centre-backs that he comes up against in Ireland don't really want to kick him. Not the same way that they did in England where he got battered around the place, but this lad has no problem putting himself around. And as I say, you know, Spate beside him did very well as well, but I thought he was the outstanding one of the pair on this day anyway.
Yeah, it's talk he might actually get a move from Dundalk at some stage. He's 22 years of age still. I'm a big fan of Bobby Burns, lads. I have to say, I remember he played against Bohemians and although he was on the losing side for Galway last season, I thought he really stood out left back. And of course, he's played left back, he's played centre mid for Dundalk, and he's just a really brilliant all-round footballer. He's a really, really skillful player. Again, player, he's only 26, so still a few years ahead of him. Just had a quick check. So 2012 to 2018, Johnny Dunleavy, I think you're at Cork City. Just looking at Killer's stats here, Kilduff against Cork City. Between 2012 and 2018, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 appearances against Cork City. 12 appearances. How many goals?
I was out, I forgot, the big fat O lads,
he got zero.
There you
so
go.
Johnny Dunleavy, I tell you one thing, that's bragging rights for him against Killer. There you go. Vinny, you're there. You've little faith.
Yeah, no, I'll say no. Dave McMillan scored all the goals anyways.
Vinny, back-to-back draws for Bowes, all as well at the big club in Fisborough. They're in the ascendancy. Everything's sweet there, isn't it? Fans all happy.
You're the man on the ground, not me.
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what
do you say? The team is third in the table. There's, you know, Alan Reynolds, look, as we know, he gave that interview to myself up at Drogheda last season. And he had a go back at, there's a lot of fans of Bowes who just haven't warmed to him ever, and they never will. And I think he accepted that, and he said it on the night. There are a lot of those supporters that still aren't happy. And look, they have their right to their opinion, and a lot of them are members of the club, so even more so. They are in third position, but performances haven't been great over the last few weeks. He's now 8 matches without a win, Alan Reynolds in charge of Bowes. So, like, he needs that victory quickly, doesn't he? And Dundalk's a really hard place to go for it.
I don't think it's unfair to suggest that Bowles should be in the title race. Are they capable of beating Rovers? Probably not, in my view. But I think they've underachieved. They overachieved probably at the season, never underachieved. Mm. I think if you want to sum up Bowles' season, I think you go to that game on Friday night. They were atrocious in the first half. They were maybe mismanaged in terms of the shape and the system. The 4-4-2 didn't work, not just because of the two up front. The two wingers played really narrow, and that was by design. So they're trying to get Selim Munnen away on the right-hand side, for argument's sake. And they played Dale Rooney so narrow that he made it easy for Derry. I understand leaving out players and trying different things while they're searching for a win. And then at half-time, they were excellently managed. And the manager got the right team right, got the players up for the second half. And they were absolutely outstanding in the second half against Derry and should have won the game. So, I mean,
Can I actually say as well about that goal, the goal Derry City scored? I know Casper Hrasca, the goalkeeper, is taking a lot of pelters for that one.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the two players standing in front of him. I think it was Parr and Dawson Devoy were standing in front, and they both turned their back to the ball. And you're thinking, you know, players have to take responsibility here. You got to jump in front of the ball, try and block the shot. And I wonder, was Hrasca even caught off guard by that? Maybe he was expecting one of his players to step in front, and that's why he got cut out. But look, you can debate those ones. Like across the weekend, like again against Shelburne, Vinny, like they played some really good football. They were very good, but just, and I can see what, I think was it yourself or Garrett saying a couple of weeks ago about those cracks in the defence. You know, like, is it down to the defenders who got off to such a great start? Is there a lack of quality with regards to a defensive midfielder standing in front of those two centre-backs and you know, doing the dirty work?
Well, you can't have your cake and eat. You can't have Dawson the boy marauding around midfield and looking absolutely brilliant.
Well, should he not be further up the pitch?
Well, I think sometimes that, in one sense, takes away from him. If Dawson, and we use these numbers, 6, 8 and 10, if you have your... In a 4-3-3, the best way to play is having a really good 6, 8 and 10, obviously. I think they have the makings of that. I'm very surprised Diallo hasn't played more games. I don't know why. Adam McDonald certainly gives them running power in midfield when he comes in. But I think Adam likes to be the one that joins into the box. So if you've got Devoy marauding, Adam McDonald joining into the box, and Rossi running from the 10 position, then you're vacating a big area in front of your back four. So they've got to get the balance right. There's times where I wonder, are Bowles as a staff overthinking it, whether that's inverting fullbacks, whether all of these mad systems and styles of play. And I just wonder about that sometimes. I think at their very, very best, when you get all the best players on the pitch and they play a very simple way. Johnny spoke about Dundalk. What are Dundalk doing really well? They haven't got the same quality of Bowles, but it's very organised what they're doing. There's no mad ideas coming out. There's no overthinking it. Bowles have gone to back threes at different stages in mid-games. They've, as I said, inverted the fullbacks. They're playing centre midfielders at fullbacks. And as I said, and at times they've been brilliant. So I can only give you Friday night as the best example. I done that live in the call, what I see, and some people mightn't like it. They were poor Friday night on and off the pitch, and then they were outstanding on and off the pitch from a coaching point of view in the second half. They've got to get something out. They've got to take something from and be better on and off
the pitch like you were in the second half of Friday night. And that means getting the very best out of Rossi's a great example. I've mentioned him a good few times on this podcast. I think he's one of the best players in the league. But if Bowles are going to get compete for league titles, that's why the noise comes for Reynolds, because people in that club believe they should be at least chasing down league titles. Not winning an eight is not chasing down the league title. Then Rossi has to go up another level and they have to get the very best out of him. To be fair to him, those times he's been playing narrow off the right, his best position is in the number 10, I think. And they've just got to get that bit right. So, and that's the job of a manager. It's easy for me to do it. This is a cheap seat. I'm not paid to do it. I was deemed not good enough to do it with that club. And they believe Reynolds is, and hopefully he is for Bowles. I love Bowles. I love what they do. Love everything they stand for. But you can't keep going on for years and years and years and not competing for league titles and expect your fans of a club that's supposed to be happy, Steve.
Yeah, no, I can hear what you're saying, and a lot of fans are saying what you're saying, Vinny, is that it's too long now that they've not competed for the top prize, and that's what they want to do. We move on then, last couple of games before we wrap up. Shelburne at home to one of your old clubs, Sligo Rovers, Johnny, on Friday night as well. Like, Joey O'Brien, I think, is going to be happy enough after his weekend, getting the win on Friday, getting the draw then on Monday in a very hard-fought Dublin derby. Maybe they were edged out, I think, by Bowes on Monday night overall. But against the Sligo Rovers side, who were on the up, and then a draw and a defeat over the weekend for Johnny Russell's team. They lost only by a goal to nil against Drogheda United, so not too bad away from home. And then a home draw against St. Pat's. So, like, I think he'd be happy enough, John Russell, going into this game against Shelburne at Tolka Park. And we know Tolka Park has not been kind to the home team this season. The Bitter Red might fancy themselves.
Yeah, they might fancy themselves to at least take something from the game, Steve. I suppose from a Shelburne point of view, first and foremost, the result against Dundalk felt massive. It felt like a really, really big win for them, just given where they were coming from. They were coming on the back of four defeats in a row. Yeah. And it felt sort of pivotal that they get something from the game. And I personally didn't expect them to win it, I have to say. So for them to go up there and do that, and a difficult place to go, was a big, big win for them. And as you say, Monday against Bowes, they got a point. Whether they played well or not, it doesn't particularly matter. They've sort of at least stopped their rot, and you know they'll be hoping that they can kind of kick on from here. I suppose from a Sligo point of view, it wasn't a bad weekend by any means. And you know, there looked to be a point where themselves and Waterford, similar to where Sligo were last year, that they might get caught adrift a little bit. But a lot like the Shelburne result that I didn't see coming, when they went to Bowes and beat Bowes 2-1 away from home, I did not see that result coming whatsoever. I mean, you could look at it, if you look at it from a stats perspective, it probably looked somewhat like a smash and grab, but it absolutely doesn't matter. And they followed it on with two massive ones, and one being against Waterford, which of course was like a six-pointer. So Sligo have managed to very much stop the rot. They've become much more competitive than they were. And I think there was a few things they were suffering from potentially at the start of the season. I know that there were people in the club that were not at all happy with the surface and the showgrounds, that it was very difficult to play on. And maybe that has improved somewhat. They're a team that they're a passing team, really. Mm-hmm. They're not a physically imposing team or anything like it. They outpass you and they outplay you if they're going to get a result. And possibly that has been a change. So, look, Sligo, as you say, they're going to be going into it with some form of confidence at least, and they'll be looking to pick up something from the game, surely.
Yeah, he needs a centre-forward though, doesn't he, Vinny, because Traore hasn't worked out. They don't really have somebody there who's just going to put the ball into the back. And look, I know, listen, even the top teams are struggling to find a decent centre forward, but if Sligo Rovers could get somebody who can score even between 8 to 10 goals for, you know, from the summer transfer window till the end of the season, is that the kind of big thing you would see in that team?
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, you'll always get, whether it's Will Fitzgerald, who we waxed lyrical about, Archie Mickinson, people like that will always chip in, but they just need someone for when the game's in the balance, or just to get enough goals, just to get them over the line. I think there's certain cohorts, probably four clubs, are really hoping that Sligo struggle just for a peace of mind. And they've went and gone the other way. When you think about it, what, a couple of points off Shelburne, And you've got Galway and Drogheda in between them. So they're there, thereabouts. And
they'd overtake Shells with a win. Go on ahead.
Yeah, and nobody wants to be in the playoff position, even though you would fancy, particularly the way the league has gone over the last couple of years, anyone ends up in the playoff. So you'll want Sligo to struggle. The teams like Drogheda, Galway won't be heartbroken if Shells beat Sligo this weekend, just to keep them down there scrapping. So, but look, the one thing John Russell has done for a number of years is unearled a sort of quality player here and there. His transfer windows have generally worked out. They expect them to get something. Sometimes you do run out of luck and you just don't get it. But they've given themselves enough buffer at Waterford to be okay in your field this year. But they'll be keeping one eye on Drogheda and Galway as well. So you fancy them just to find somebody, don't you? It just feels like they've done it so many times, they're going to do it again.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if Shells kind of overcome their home hoodoo at the moment. I'd say I was actually very impressed by Freitas on Monday. I thought his general link-up play and his stuff around the box actually quite good. It'd be interesting to see if Joey can get him scoring, because he still has to score. He's played 12 matches now, but I think they do have a player there. It's just a matter of getting the ball to him in the box and trying to get chances for him.
You know what, Steve, on that, and I said it, this is probably, I'm not saying this is what I said, but a couple of weeks ago on the pod, I would have said Shells will be very good when the pitches get better, the sun comes out on the top of the ground type of pitch, and the likes of Freitas, like, you're right, I think that will suit him. Harry Wood, Jarvis, these type of players, even Henry Francis, they want that type of ground. Those bobbly cuff pitches probably weren't suiting them, but that's not an excuse for where Shells are in the league. I just feel that the next couple of weeks they could really be developing as a team.
Yeah. Just to finish up then, Drogheda versus Derry, we're coming to towards the end here. Drogheda's, like, I don't know how to explain their defensive issues, Johnny, and I know it will be hard for you to do so in a couple of minutes, but I know Kevin Doherty has even said in his interviews, you know, he doesn't know what's going on. They're leaking too many goals. I'd say he's tearing his hair out at this stage. They really need to fix that.
Yeah, it's something that they would have, I think we were speaking about it off air, Steve, it's something that they would have prided themselves on in terms of being very hard to beat and being rigid and being solid. And I suppose the ironic thing about it, or the unusual thing about it, is they went nine without a win. They've conceded 11 in their last four, but they've won two of them. So I'm not sure what Kevin Doherty, I'm not sure he would change too much about those four. You know, it's a funny thing. But definitely they've become a little bit less, probably a little bit less rigid or a little bit less solid than they had been, and a little bit easier to beat. And that's probably been the transformation, let's say, in their form. For whatever reason that has been, it could just literally be some inconsistency. It could be, you know, losses to players and key positions, stuff like that. But it has been something that's been very evident in them over the last number of weeks. As I say, if it leads to them being a little bit more expansive, maybe going forward, and they decide actually, instead of conceding less, we're going to score more. They might, you know, it could lead to them being even more enjoyable for the Drogheda fans to watch. And as I say, the last four games, if they're anything to go by, it might just be like that.
Yeah, and I don't think Derry City like go to Drogheda too often, Vinny. But like Tiernan Lynch now, he's got six matches without defeat, two wins in the last four. You know, they've had their last four matches on the road are unbeaten as well. One win, three draws. So there's an upward curve there for him. But this, you know, it's starting to, maybe just starting to come good from now, finally.
Yeah, I think, and I know they made changes on Monday because Friday, Monday, but there's a consistency about them, consistency about how they're playing. That's what we've been calling for probably 12 months here in the podcast, in terms of who's starting for them. Clark has obviously done really well at different stages. There's no doubt they should be doing better than where they currently are. I thought they were very good for a long period of time. Again, you go back to that game last Friday night, it sums up both teams' performances of the season. Derry should have won the game because their first half was so good. And they were very, very lucky not to be beaten because the second half was so poor. And Rovers sort of put them open. So, but I think there's the consistency. I think that 4-3-2 shape suits them much, much better, or 4-3-3. Josh Thomas does really well for them, and then they're able to bring in whoever it is, Depot. So they've got real options. Michael Duffy, as I said, is almost there now. Yeah, you would imagine the problem is the halfway to summer. The next 2 or 3 weeks are really important for Tiernan Lynch. Losing 2 or 3 them games is hammer blow to what they're doing. But winning 2 or 3 means all of a sudden they're potentially having a really good season by their standards. So it's a big couple of weeks.
They're only 12 off the top, Vinny. There's a title challenge in that Derry City team yet. You never know. You never know.
That's why I felt Friday was huge for them. If they'd have went and beaten in 1 week Shell, Shamrock Rovers and Bowes, that was huge for them.
Yeah.
And they let that game go at half-time. And only the injury to Winchester in midfield, they had a big injury in there. But Cameron Dunman came on and is as good as anything they have anyway.
Yeah.
They just got it all wrong Friday and they let 3 points slip.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, they've got a chance to make amends for that against Drogheda United this Friday night. But as I said, our feature game on Off the Ball from 7 o'clock will be Galway United at home to Shamrock Rovers. Can't wait to get down to Eamon DC Park. I'll be seeing you there, Johnny Dunleavy. Thanks a million for your contributions on this week's pod, and looking forward to working with you on Friday. Vinnie Perth, we'll chat to you again. Enjoy wherever you are off to this Friday. Where are you going, Vinnie, Friday night?
Friday night, I'm going to Richmond.
Oh, down to Richard.
Having a night off in Richmond.
Down to talk to Coco about your cherry orchard days.
Those were the days we were winning intermediate cups, Charlie Carl cups, Vance Senior League cups.
Jeez,
talk about cups. I always talk about winning when Johnny's on.
They're
all day.
Oh, I can see that. Very full mantelpiece in the house there, Steve. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's got an extension. Lads, thanks a million. We shall chat to you next week. Folks, don't as well. Don't forget to tune in to LOI Late Night on X on Friday night from 10 o'clock with Shane Keegan. And then, of course, Ross Flanagan will have your LOI wrap up in your podcast feeds on Saturday morning. We'll chat to you next week.
Cheers, man.
The LOI Pod on Off the Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off the Ball all season.